It's a beautiful morning.
Barcelona. Welcome to English Radio Thursday. I'm Virgil still, and we're going to have a good day today. Sun's out, a little chilly, but it's nice. Well, the city is slowly moving back into work mode. We really don't start working until January 15th because, you know, it's one of those Catalan things. But brings to mind to me, you know, how are we doing as a city and as a region? I believe that we're doing pretty well, that we live in paradise, but is that really a reality or merely a perceived fantasy? Our guest today, Mikhail Strubel, author, educator, politicist, will help us sort out what's really going on. Welcome to the show again, Mikhail.
Thanks. It's not January the 15th yet, but I managed to make it.
That's a very good thing. Well, you have that, I guess, partly Catalan, partly UK sense of responsibility to work.
Yes, I'd amend your comment. I think January the 6th is the crucial day, and I think work more or less turns up on the 7th or 8th of January.
But yeah, anyway. It's true. Folks kind of don't want to really just. It's not like the U.S. where boom, it's done. You get back into it. Uh-huh. Folks kind of ease into it in a very casual way. Which is nice.
We have less suicide than many other places.
Well, putting it on that kind of a note, yeah, that's true. Well, we've been on with this many times before, talking about a lot of different things. But tell us, what is your hot-button issue facing Catalonia today?
If you say today, without any doubt at all, the forthcoming trials against... In fact, of hundreds, probably 1,000 Catalans, nearly all politicians, on the issue of holding a referendum, which isn't even illegal in Spain, and probably not in most other countries.
Yeah, we've talked about this whole issue for over a year, and it's something that is a major, major concern. But we're going to be talking about that and some other things, right after this.
Thank you.
And that was Quest by Jeff Lorber and his band Fusion. Well, we talked a little bit, you know, about our own quest here in Catalonia and our rights of self-determination. And that probably is going to make another show because we've done, quite a few with Miguel and others on the subject. But really what I want to talk about today is where Barcelona is. What are the positives that we have? You know, for the past 3 years, we've seen an annual increase in foreign direct investment into Catalonia and Barcelona of more than 5 billion euros each year. Now, what do you think is driving this faith in Catalonia over the rest of Europe?
It's easy to be so bland, if you like, and give simple answers, and particularly the different websites which do rank cities or regions, and Barcelona always comes out. Obviously, your question can't be answered in terms of tourist reactions. That we're talking about people who are investing, want a return on their investment, and are creating jobs, so that's more permanent. I think Barcelona has a kind of balance between a number of factors that people appreciate. There's one geographical and, if you like, climate factor, which is that it's not very cold in winter. It's not too hot in summer.
No.
If it is too hot, you have a beach, you know, a couple of underground stations away. And in the winter, you know, within 2 hours, you're up skiing in the mountains. So, and it's a very rich country if you want to spend a weekend traveling around. So there's that side of it, which is more the leisure side. And then I think you'd have to ask a lot of people what it is about the city itself that does attract investors. You'll find that there are hubs. There's a particular digital new technology hub around what they call a Arroba, at 22. And that, I think, is being enormously successful. We can talk about the kinds of jobs, if you like, later. And I think that is important. People, investors are not jumping in the deep end, taking a huge risk by investing alongside hundreds of other foreign companies that are doing the same.
Well, the interesting thing about that, you know, talking about it, is that, you know, the majority of the foreign investment has come from Germany, France, the UK, US, and Japan. Obviously, these are countries that already have a very well-developed infrastructure. You know, what's the attraction for these companies, you know, particularly those European ones?
Obviously, I mean, we ought to ask them deliberately. I'm not an economist. But I think one of the factors is that a lot of – we're not talking about countries. We're talking about companies from
those countries.
Ones that are in the industrial field, in the – export-import area of business, find that Barcelona as a port or as a communications hub is has enormous prospects. You have the we could talk about Chinese later if you like. But I think it's ideally placed for trade, not across the Atlantic. That's catered for by the northern European ports very well, but for through the Suez Canal to the whole of Asia, Barcelona is ideal. And if you look at the area around the port and around the airport, it's a delta. It's absolutely flat. And sadly, it can be developed enormously. I mean, there's plenty of room for development in that area.
Well, I think we've seen, you know, the fact that they're in and around Llobregat, you know, that area, they have airport. You know, there's more warehouses, you know, shipping consolidators, more companies actually coming in there, setting up headquarters. And I think, you know, the port is a very, very viable one. The rail links to the port, you know, are, you know, improving.
Let's say that is the big outstanding blockage, let's say, of the full development of the port. And that is serious responsibility of the Spanish government.
Which they have failed to live up to their promise on that. But I think, again, in mentioning the fact that we've seen the development of the Poblano area in terms of digital economy, and the fact that we do have, throughout Barcelona, we have Wi-Fi service, free Wi-Fi service, which is, you know, fantastic. Compared to other places around the world that are even more developed. But I think, you know, again, looking at it, you know, kind of answering my own question, I think that, you know, if you look at Germany and the UK, we represent maybe a lower cost economy in some ways, that it's easier for them to do business here as opposed to doing business in their countries. Because we have a very, intelligent and experienced workforce. We have a multilingual workforce. We have a very high level of productivity.
I agree with you there. I think Dublin for a time had that added value, but not in terms of foreign languages, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think Barcelona is very well placed here. There's long tradition of learning French, which has declined in favor of learning English. But let's say France is just next door. I think France is the biggest exporter to Catalonia. So in that sense, the multilingual sensitivity of Barcelona is key, is crucial.
It is. I think, you know, in kind of getting back on the tangent we had just walked away from, the fact that China, India, and now Russia are the fastest growing investing groups. And I think in the case of China and Russia, we can say the countries are investing in Barcelona as opposed just to the companies. I think that's a big attraction. The fact that the Chinese have already put $2 billion into the development of the port. So I think for them, you know, Barcelona represents a opportunity to export to Europe and everywhere else, going down to Africa, whatever. And for Russia, it's a way for them being able to export from Russia out to the rest of the world. So I think, you know, we're very, very privileged from that standpoint.
From that standpoint, there's a very well-known economist specialized in infrastructures called Ramon Tremosa. He's an MEP right now, and paraphrasing a Catalan bishop saying from the 19th century, he says Catalonia will be logistic, or it won't exist. You know, I mean, it's the only way forward for Catalonia, which has very few mineral resources, for instance, that is fairly densely populated and therefore can't feed its population, can't give enough water to its population. So the fact that it can be a logistic hub is very, very important.
Well, that's also a historical fact, because I think going back centuries, Barcelona has been the facilitator for many other places and regions around them as opposed to themselves. I mean, we financed many of the wars. We financed much of the trade that was happening. And so I think you know, we have a historic.
And I think if you look back to the origin of plagues from the Middle East, Barcelona as a harbor has been quite active as
which is true.
Which is a sad truth that we shouldn't turn a blind eye to, let's say. But obviously has no influence these days.
But I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it, because I think that role that we play is one that's going to become even more important and probably become even more of a concern. We'll talk about that a little bit more after this. We'll be right back. That was Herbie Hancock playing Uh-Oh, Here He Comes. Well, in that vein, and appropriate to the title, for me is the concern with China and its stated and implied objective of becoming the dominant economic power in the world. Now, we've seen that happen in the U.S. They've invested in the U.S. Treasury and pretty much own a lot of it. In the Caribbean, they've established major manufacturing bases. And in Africa, they have invested in many infrastructure projects. But not all of these investments, not all of these engagements have really been contributing to the cultural or societal backbone of these places. Is there a downside for Barcelona?
In terms of the Chinese,
well, yeah.
I mean, I remember the first Chinese restaurants in Barcelona, probably in the early 1980s, and we used to go to the restaurant where, you know, they speak in Catalan, you know, so they had made that effort to learn Catalan. You have any number of families where one member is Catalan and the other is Japanese, probably more than Chinese, but there is that element which I think we should always bear in mind. And then Chinese seem to be coming in at the top with huge infrastructure investments like the port of Barcelona as one of the main distribution centers for shipping. And at the other end, local shops, bars, typically around the Sagrada Familia, but I think and more across the city.
Absolutely.
And they're obviously not a kind of a government policy. They're people who are looking for a better life.
Well, the thing is, we look at that, and I have to say, maybe. Because I go back to my days in New York in the late 70s, early 80s, where we saw a major influx of Koreans into New York going into produce markets, little small bodegas. And they had been funded by, in many cases, the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Had set up a consortium to be able to provide money for them. And I'm looking again at the plethora of small Chinese businesses. And, you know, you can always kind of tell which ones they are because they've got a signs out front with the pictures of the food. So you know that they tend to be, you know, Chinese owned. So there's a case of saying, okay, yeah, there's the personal mandate of driving for a better life. Coupled with the fact that we see the government support for Chinese tourism, where, you know, they look at the Chinese tourists in Barcelona. I think the last number that I saw, like, they were like the number three, you know, largest group of, you know, tourists, with the two biggest destinations being Sagrada Familia and a flamenco look. So that's the thing I look at, you know, if we look at this, you know, creeping invasion.
You're not going to say the yellow peril, obviously.
But I think it's a case where, you know, we have to look at it and saying, all right, unbridled investment is not always a good thing. I think it's a case of saying, all right, we want investment, we want growth, but are the people who are coming in with money really contributing to the society?
Yeah.
And I think that comes back to a standpoint of saying, what is our government policy? And do we have a government policy? And do we have a vision for the future? And the question, you know, you rightly brought up, you know, with part of our government in prison, you know, it's tough to have a policy.
Even if the Catalan government did have powers to decide who can come and live in Catalonia or not, which, let's say, in Quebec has been negotiated with central government, with federal government, but it hasn't here. Despite offers, for instance, well, refugees are a different chapter, let's say, but it's indicative of the fact that the Catalan society has offered thousands and thousands of refugees the possibility to come and live here, and that has not been blocked by central government. You know? So it is a tricky issue whether or not you're in prison right now, put it that way.
I think, again, we look at it, we look at Australia, you know, immigrants to Australia, you know, who want to even go the legal route, whatever. you know, have very, very stringent requirements in terms of, you know, how can you get in, how you can gain residency, and where you can live and where you can work. So we don't have that kind of restrictive concept yet, but maybe something might be down the road.
There's a lot of talk about sort of illegal immigration across the Straits of Gibraltar, and that is definitely the case, and it's a serious humanitarian issue. What is Europe doing to make it so attractive for people to flee from large parts of neighboring regions? That's a very serious question which hasn't been answered.
Or the question should be saying, what is Europe doing to invest in those countries so that people can stay there?
Let's say that's the other side of the coin. I mean, that's where I was going. How to control small-scale local wars for control of natural resources, for instance. If that can be controlled, then people won't want to flee from the risk of their village being burnt down, for instance.
No, I think the whole thing, when we were talking about it, that human capital is one of the perceived benefits of investing in Catalonia because of what we just talked about earlier. Yeah, we've not seen a major increase in the salary levels of most sectors and individuals. What's your take on this?
It's a tricky one, and you have to look at sort of neo-capitalism at its crudest, I think. The fact that there is still a much higher unemployment rate in the whole of Spain, less so in Catalonia, but in the whole of Spain, than in most of the rest of Europe, means that the trade unions, for instance, are in a much more feeble position to negotiate, and it makes it harder for the individual to fight for improvements in his or her living standards, let's say, in jobs, which will go to someone who will accept poorer conditions if you're not interested. So that is, as I say, is the crude reality of what we seem to be living through here. And I think things are improving slowly, but the more they improve, the less attractive Catalonia will become for new investments. I'm not particularly keen on the idea of the population of Catalonia continuing to grow. It expanded by 20% in just about 15 years. So that's far harder than any other country in the civilized world, faster, let's say. And Catalonia doesn't have the resources, the means, the tools, basically, to be able to incorporate those people in terms of knowledge of the language, not knowledge of local customs, traditions, history, geography, and so on. Which means that, in fact, all this new migration is giving support to the hegemonic culture of Spain and weakening the Catalan culture, which is another serious issue.
Well, I think, we started looking at it, and we'll talk a little bit more about the whole expat thing. So many expats, I noticed, come here for many of the attractive reasons you've, detailed, but yet they come here without a clear job objective. They say, oh, I want to teach English, or I'll do the, like, okay, what was your idea? What was your thought about, being able to be self-sufficient and really be able to contribute to the society? And the idea of, coming here and doing even a digital startup or whatever, it still needs to have a basis of financial responsibility for yourself. And you can't rely upon the government to provide for you. And I think, again, it's what you talked about, is that we've had this tremendous influx of people leaving economies that either were stronger or weaker, but yet now they're here in the Catalan economy and not necessarily being able to contribute to its growth.
I totally agree with you. There's another element, I think, that is, let's say 100 years ago, population movements were probably regarded as permanent by the people taking part in those movements. Mm-hmm. The Italians that went to Argentina or, right. I don't know, the Greeks to the States, they didn't think they'd return home seriously.
Right.
Perhaps at heart they did, but they these were life options. Whereas I think now, we should talk about you and I as well. People move around with much less idea of permanence, which means that they'll take root, well, you know, in the medium term, but certainly not as an immediate objective.
I know we were just talking with a friend this weekend about the number of places we've lived in, and I went back, you know, I've lived in 12 different places over the course of my life. You know, she had lived in 9, so it's a case where there is a sense of we can create a life where we want to create.
Uh-huh. Plus the fact that at home, well, the Englishman's home is a castle, but everyone else's home is also a castle. And in this day and age, you can be from Bahrain, live in Barcelona, and watch Bahrain TV and read Bahrain newspapers online and live in a little bubble. In a little bubble.
Yeah.
And they're huge. I mean, this is a bubble bath, isn't it, basically?
It is.
Not just Barcelona, but in all modern cities,
probably. It's very true. It's true. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Guidón Barcelona, English Radio Thursday. Lots more to talk about right after this. That was Ronan Keating Sr. with Take On Me. Now, we talked a little bit about the new jobs that are coming in based on the investment being made. Where are these new jobs What kind of places, what kind of industries are driving it?
I think they're, in the main, not industrial. There are long-established industries, manufacturing industries, but in the main, I think that's not the the main thrust of investment. There's a great deal in digital technologies. Mm-hmm. And there are thousands of jobs being made for well-qualified people in computing and engineering. That's one big area. And then the area of logistics as a whole is important. I don't want to advertise as such, but there is an important distribution company that is named after the
ancient warriors of a female persuasion.
Exactly. I was going to mention a jungle in South America,
you're right.
but that's much better reference. Again, that's hundreds and hundreds of new jobs in the field of logistics. And then I think in other services you can find a large... There's a big industry in call centres, for instance.
Right.
Not because the Catalans are particularly multilingual, but it's a very neat place to have people from who speak different European or
right.
mainly European
or
languages.
Or global languages, yeah.
Or global languages to... come here and work, probably not on a permanent basis, which comes back to the whole
It's like in India. India had become the call center for the U.S., and then all of a sudden they realized that they could get better quality service and the same equanimity of language capability by coming to Ireland initially, and then now with places like here.
I think that they play around, obviously, the salaries, the time zones. Try and keep the people working within ordinary working hours in each time zone.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that, again, the quality of the service personnel is key. I know when I was back in the States dealing with sometimes the Indian call centers was frustrating as hell. Trying to get them to understand what you're saying.
And then to understand what they're saying.
Yeah, right. But, right.
I have that problem with some services in Spanish where, the fellow, this is mid-afternoon, the fellow is munching through his breakfast sandwich somewhere in eastern Venezuela or Colombia or something like that. And again, their language is not the same, and their, let's say, their understanding of.
Right.
And you say, "Can I please have the Catalan language service?" And
right.
The what service? They've never heard of the word Catalan.
I know.
Wow.
I know. Well, speaking about that, what do you think the government, both the Barcelona government and the Catalonian government, has done, really to support this need for human capital and for appropriate wage levels? I mean, have they done things at the school systems? Have they provided additional support for these kind of things? The burden has to be on them to a great extent, too.
I think they have to be sensitive to the needs of expats, particularly when they come to live here. I think Barcelona has developed a good system to welcome expats into Barcelona. They have these get-togethers several times a year for newcomers. There are areas where, let's say, for the main foreign languages spoken by school children, if they're not in the curriculum as such, there are many, many examples of these languages being offered within schools as, let's say, extracurricular activity, but at least they're being offered, which I think is, and that will be initiative of the Catalan government, reaching out to people from other countries to try and make them feel at home, basically.
Well, it's interesting then because in that vein, the Los Angeles city school system has these kind of extra language services. And recently I saw that they were teaching 41 different languages as part of the Los Angeles school system. Now, going back to our comment during the break about expats, while many of them are here and they're enjoying life and they're doing better, Are they really invested in Catalonia as a home?
That's a very good question. I would give, come back to an issue I raised earlier. I know a lot of people who married into Catalan families, and let's say the ones that are happy are still here.
Right.
You know, nothing is necessarily permanent. So that's, let's say that's the back door. I mean, it's not what you'd expect most people to look for. But let's say the fact that it is happening quite a lot and has been for many years is a sign of openness to some extent, at least by individuals and families, towards people from other cultures. There probably are signs of racism or xenophobia in some quarters, but in terms of the official policies and discourses, that is completely out of the question.
Yeah, well, I think it is, but part of it, you know, is, you know, the idea of having the welcome groups and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, Barcelona Global does one each year, and other programs. The Catalan government has an online course in learning the language, which is great. But again, it goes back to how can the newbie really immerse themselves when we have so many things up there that they don't have to? I mean, we talked about the fact that, you know, you have people who can continue to look at Sky TV and know what's happening in the UK. I can look at what's happening in the US on TV on my internet. You know, and it's not like I'm here, but I'm really not.
I know a girl who lives in London who's getting married here in Catalonia in May, and she said, well, we're finding that a lot of people coming to the wedding will be coming from very far afield. So why don't we put up on our website ideas of things that they can do if they stay longer than previously expected? And this girl in London, is she went to the tourist office, which is very near where she works, and she, you know, she's amazed by the opportunities that are offered to get to know this country and what it has to offer in terms of, in this case, tourism. You know, just if you want a 3-day tour, 6-day tour, why don't you go here, there? And you like bird watching, you like mountain climbing, you like whatever, you've got it. She's amazed at what is on offered. And in fact, she was born here. In fact, she's my daughter, you know. So the fact that she is amazed means that really we're not fully aware of what is on offer. So I think what we should try and do is get all people who live here, whether or not they just arrived, they're newbies, or they lived here all their lives, to get to know the country.
Well, I think, you know, that brings another point. One of my sticking points about being here is that we do not do a good job of marketing. You know, we've got, you know, many things, many products, many services that you just took to hear, but like our wines or olive oils. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people say olive oil, oh, Italy.
Italy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no. Mm-hmm. You know, no. In fact, the Italians will buy our oil and then
that's
repackage it.
It,
you know. And so we have not really embraced the concept of marketing to a great extent to be able to effectively get some of our good points out there.
I think you're right. The Italians have been very good at the world of design, of selling things which probably made at least as well in other places.
You're right.
Successfully. You know, full marks to them. I don't think that should downgrade others.
No.
But I think Catalonia and Barcelona have played the Gaudí card very well. You mentioned, I was going to say hordes, perhaps that's not a suitable word. But, you know, large numbers of large groups of people from Japan a few years ago, and now also from Korea and from China, visiting the city, not to live here, fair enough, let's say in the main, and really, really doing that because Gaudí and the city have been sold very well.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of other products, I agree with you. Wines, I think, have improved enormously and are exporting really quite well to many, many different countries. But a lot of these producers are small producers, so they can't become so well known worldwide unless they are in the top 10. You know.
But again, even say that, you know, we look at the digital strength of Catalonia, you can be a very small company and have a very, very big presence if you use the web effectively.
Yes, indeed, most definitely.
And, you know, and it's a case where, you know, you don't have to be big to play big, as we say.
You're quite right. And there are any number of success stories that back up that idea.
Now, talking a little bit about tourists, we've seen that, you know, maybe tourism necessarily isn't a good thing. We've had the protests in Barceloneta, the concerns about Airbnb and all of that. Most recently, we've seen Venice putting a special charge on tourists who are not going to stay more than a day. Mm-hmm. Do you see that, you know, Barcelona might move that direction?
I think there's a big issue of hypocrisy here. You know, Barcelona citizens are among the most widely traveled in the world. I mean, it can't be any about that. But for three or four people talking to me about their trip to Sri Lanka, you know, where's Sri Lanka? No, I know because I like Ceylon tea,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
But Thailand and people off to the Andes. And
right.
So let's say the Catalans as a whole, and particularly Barcelonese, are traveling around a great deal.
Absolutely.
They will resent being held up at the Taj Mahal because there are too many tourists, you know. But in the same sentence, they're concerned about the amount of tourism.
Correct.
In the, particularly the Rambla. The Rambla, 50 years ago, was a place you rambled along almost, you know, saying hi to most of the locals that you actually bumped into. Now to actually hear Catalan being spoken in the Rambla is a kind of miracle.
It's true.
So I think that the city is concerned about this. And I think, Catalonia as a whole is also concerned. But let's say it's like trying to hold up the river with a rake, you know. I mean, there's not all that much you can do, probably.
Which is true.
So I think what they've been trying to do is to raise the profile of tourism in Barcelona. Tourism is for, you know, middle class. Now, Airbnb, is the hole in the drain pipe, isn't it? Because that's another access, large-scale access, which a lot of people are concerned about because it's being misused in some cases, and I don't want to generalize.
But true. We'll be back for some closing comments right after this. And that was the great Clifford Brown with Joy Spring. Well, with a rating of 85%, Spain is ranked 17th out of 162 places on the ranking of the safest and most dangerous countries. Barcelona is a bit more dangerous, and I put that in quotes, because of the high number of tourists being pickpocket targets. I don't really see that being a great dangerous crime. And in many cases, tourists do stupid things like leave their phone and their wallets on the table. You know, it's like, you don't do that in New York. You don't do that in Chicago. You know, why the hell are you doing it here? It's a little, but again, the big thing I'm seeing in a lot of the social media groups is that Ada Colau is soft on crime because she's not doing more to control this. What do you think?
I mean, you're talking politics now. In the end, beyond the statistics, you're talking politics. I'm not a devout follower of Ada Colau, the mayoress of Barcelona, myself. But what I try to do is think, how did they reach that conclusion? You know, and I think it must be related to the Manteros, who are these sub-Saharan street vendors of counterfeit products, typically of handbags and scarves and things like that, who have been known to create, local problems with the police or whatever, and they are an eyesore to the extent that they occupy places which are obviously not intended
for their primary point of commerce, right?
Exactly.
But I find though that most of the Monteros usually are from Senegal, and they are entrepreneurial, and usually not aggressive in terms of crime or anything. They want to sell you something as opposed to take something from you. So
most definitely. No, what I'm trying to do is analyze the subjective background to why people feel Ada Colau is being permissive, let's say, with whatever. I don't know. She closed down the riot control squad in the Barcelona police force a bit abruptly, I think, and that gave the impression that she was not accepting the city's responsibility for riot control, which is not one of the biggest problems in the city. You know, hang on, when the program ends, they're expecting me in a riot down the street. You know, so I think there's a tremendous subjective element here.
Yeah, I think so. And I think unjustly in many cases, because again, it's part of the lack of assimilation into the society, and self removal. And in many cases, many people bring their prejudices with them.
Very often, yeah.
So it's and that's the issue. So, but looking at that, and looking apart from that, what do you see as some of the main challenges, opportunities for Catalonia?
Right now, is sorting out who recognizes Catalonia as such, and with what status. Now, that is undoubtedly the biggest problem right now. Barcelona, let's say, the Barcelonese have to decide whether Barcelona should be cast to the world as, the second largest city in Spain or the Iberian Peninsula, or as the capital of something. I think that will be a debate in the forthcoming local elections. And one way and another, Barcelona does need the infrastructures completed. The Mediterranean corridor for freight is absolutely essential, not only for Barcelona, but for Tarragona, for Valencia, for Murcia, right the way down the Mediterranean coast.
Well, actually, the World
Bank
to Portugal.
Course, that would be across the across the peninsula, wouldn't affect Barcelona so directly, let's say. That would be traffic coming in through Zaragoza or perhaps up through Bilbao. So I think the infrastructure issue is crucial, and I think in terms of the airport, were slowly getting over the long-standing international bilateral agreements, which said that foreign national airlines had to fly into Barajas Airport, and that which obviously excluded the possibility of them flying into Barcelona. That gradually is being overcome.
That's been, remember when I first started working here 15 years ago, you couldn't get to Barcelona without going through Madrid.
That obviously was a tremendous boost for Madrid Airport,
you're right.
which is still slightly ahead in terms of travelers, but that's largely because it is used as a local hub.
Right.
It doesn't justify the fact that there's people working in security in the two airports. I mean, there's 300 in Barcelona and 1,000 in Madrid, because they still haven't woken up to the fact that the potential
right.
for Barcelona Airport is colossal.
It is much bigger. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, as always, and a lot of good comments, a lot of interesting things, and probably a lot more we can talk about if we had the time, but we don't. So we're going to leave you, Barcelona. We're going to take you out with a little bit of Lautaser with Pride. Have a great one, Barcelona, and we'll see you back here next week.
Man, whoa.